Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to another episode of Get It Off Your Breast with me, Emma Gannon, and my co-host, Liana Bird. We are so excited to bring you our two amazing guests today, Gemma Kearney and Brigitte Aphrodite. We are talking about how, as a society, the way we treat the service industry, like waiters and waitresses, and is that good or bad, the way we do that currently? We also talk about narcissism and the rise of narcissistic personality disorders. Is it linked to social media? We discuss. And also, lastly, we talk about the word hipster, because there's quite a lot of opinions on that.
And we've been called them ourselves.
We have, sadly. So hope you enjoyed this episode. And before you listen, please, if you can, remember to rate and review us. It really helps other people discover us. Welcome to another episode of Get It Off Your Breast. We are so excited to be joined by Brie and Gemma, who are on a bit of a tour today around London to talk about many things. But today, you two lovely ladies, what are you getting off your breasts?
Well, I've come in with no bra on, specifically for getting it off our breasts. I want to talk about something that has... I think built up over many, many years of I need to talk about this, I need to do something about this. I was brought up in a restaurant background from the age of... my dad's always been a waiter, and then when I was 12, my mum and dad opened a joint restaurant, and from 13, I was working in it, and that was it. I've always been working in it, really. And I think in the UK, we need to address how we treat the service industry, people who serve us in restaurants, cafes, pubs, bars, and value it as more of an art form. There is a song from a musical called, I can't remember what musical it is, but waitressing is an art, and I would agree, a great waiter or waitress or restaurant manager or bar manager is a great artist in looking after people and giving people a great time. Obviously, you don't always get great service, but also it's about how you complain. You don't have to take out your life's problems on that person that is, is on their feet all day and trying to give you a good time. So that's...
I totally agree with you, and I wanted to ask you, actually, what do you do if you're out with friends? And obviously, your friends are your friends for a reason, and you love them. But I have had certain occasions where it's like, maybe not a close friend, but like an acquaintance, starts being quite rude to a waitress. And it's like, I get really upset by it. But how do you manage those situations?
Yeah. It's really hard. I think like one of my exes actually, like that's one of the reasons why we split up. Because he was also a waiter at the time as well. So he was very obsessive about what he thought was good and bad waiting, and it would ruin what's meant to be a leisurely experience, like sharing a time for coffee together with him just like obsessing as to what the service experience was like and how much he should tip. So, you know, I think what's interesting about this as a subject matter is that it's so much part of our lives, isn't it? Mm. And I think as people, we don't often moan about these things because they're kind of seen as menial, or we don't often maybe dissect the service industry necessarily if we're not waiters ourselves or we don't work in it. But at the same time, as somebody who doesn't work in that and hasn't for a long time, and I definitely have dabbled in, like when I was younger, like I go into places and get coffee, ice cream, wine, eat food, like regularly. So it's a massive part of our lives, that exchange. Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's a little bit of a class thing? Because you know when you were talking there about like waitering and waitressing being an art form, and you sometimes will go to like a posh restaurant and they'll be like a maitre d', and they have an air of real confidence, and you do tend to be like, oh, you sort of see them as like, oh, amazing, this sort of gentlewoman. And do you think it's like when you go to like a cafe, for example, that is when people are a bit more, I don't know, dismissive or rude to the staff because they don't see them as so like high-end service yeah. industry. Do you think it's slightly through that?
Yeah, probably a glamorous maitre d'. You probably you probably wouldn't be as rude to, and not everybody is absolutely rude. I suppose it's expectant of different standards from different amounts you're paying and different places you're going. But just that general empathy that, you know, if a place is really, really, really busy, that you know, it might take things might take a little bit longer, and just that understanding of, like, you know, somebody hasn't got 12-14 hands, and, you know, and something I always experience is people, like, something really interesting about being a server is the life problem things. People take out other things that they're anxious about on people that are just stood there and sort of blank to them. But as a waiter for many, many years, I never forget the people that are terribly rude, and then they see that you do something else, or, you know, you have other things that you do in life, so you're out socialising, and they might treat you differently. I think we really need to readjust that. And then also, talking about friends who treat people badly, what I always try and do is go, oh, maybe they've been working a 14-hour split shift, or I mean, look, sometimes service is really terrible, but there's ways that you can. I think we can be as in, like, Greece or Italy, if something was terribly wrong with your plate, it wasn't to your tasting, you're paying for it, they'd say straight up, you know, I'm not really, I don't think I can eat it like this, can you change it now, whereas we tend to go, disgusting, oh my God, and I'm paying all this money, and oh, we get to the end and we get more and more furious, and then at the end maybe we'll go home and write a TripAdvisor review, and then I always think, oh no, I could have solved that as a waiter,
So communication is key then.
Key.
And that goes back to what I was saying, like, rather than letting it brew, because if you're with somebody that you're seeing is not enjoying their experience, it's hard because it's contagious, isn't it? And you feel for them because you want them to have a good experience, but if you're just watching them not actually communicate that, then maybe that is a British thing. Yeah. And I also think it's a regional thing as well, because, you know, myself and Brie don't live in London anymore, and we've got different views as to, like, why we live in somewhere different. Or not views, we've got different reasons, is what I mean, as to, like, why. But one of the things for me is, like, the swell of rudeness in this city. Yeah, I feel like this city is, I mean, it's a cliche, isn't it, to be like, oh, London is really busy, London is really stompy, London is really, like, gnarly-faced, and all these things. But I think, you know, with the rise of chains, like, and with the rise of capitalism and austerity, actually, it makes us more angry, more anxious, and more rude.
And less, like, locally friendly with other people. Because I, like, where I live, I actually do know, like, the two people that work in my post office really well, because I'm always in there, like, posting a big part of my life. But it's always, like, I ask how they are, and then the other day, one of them was like, oh, I'm actually not very well today, like, and my child's ill or whatever, and it was like, her child had a cold and she's been up all night, and it was like just that exchange of, like, you're a person. I was like, oh God, I hope you're all right. And I don't know, it's just people are people, and even if you're having a go at a taxi driver, for example, because he's lost, like, well, maybe he's had a really bad day.
But I think it's really easy to dehumanise people, and I'm actually, like, I'll confess, like, the one time, well, I slightly do it with traffic wardens, like, I get really angry at traffic wardens, and I have to remember, like, they're doing their job, and they've probably had a shit day too. But the worst, and I feel terrible about even admitting this, but you know when you're on the phone to someone, like, trying to fix the internet or trying to fix your phone or something, and they obviously, like, sometimes they just don't have the skills or the knowledge because they're being paid, like, nothing. They're maybe not even in this country. They have, like, and their job is to kind of slightly fob you off. And you get angry because they're not in front of you. So you can't see them as a human. And you forget, you're not looking in their sad little eyes. Like, you know, and I get really ragey and angry, and I take out my life frustrations on them, and I feel terrible afterwards. But I think it's so much easier when you've got that technology separating you.
Yeah. I think it's really important to say that nobody is actually perfect. And I'm definitely, like, I feel anxious talking about this because I'm thinking back to what a horror I can be. And I think, again, that's another reason why I had to, like, grow up a bit and think about that, because you know, it feels bad to be rude.
But isn't it so easy to have that boiling over rage? Like, you shouldn't, like, a pizza that's late shouldn't send you over the edge, but sometimes it can.
Proper hangriness.
Hangry, yeah.
It's about care as well. Like, I think you feel it. It's like in the air, isn't it? It's an energy. If you're in a space, whether that's a restaurant or even like something more personal, like a dinner party, whatever, you could not that people are waiting on you at a dinner party, but in terms of that energy, the energy is really important. And you could tell, even when by the way that food tastes, for example, whether it's like there's love and care there. Mm. And then sometimes if you're somewhere where it might be coming from management or maybe it's coming from that particular way or whatever, like it just feels like no one really, like, yeah, the anger, yeah, is like two ways,
and then it is fine, and then it is fine not to pay the service at the end. Yeah. It's fine to say, oh, I felt like it was a bit hostile. I can't pay that 12.5% service. And that is blimmin' fine. And if it's been amazing, then it's fine to leave an extra couple of quid on top.
Do you know, have you ever found in France, it makes me laugh, because like I find that the serving, like when you go to a restaurant, they're really rude to you, but it's almost like it's not a thing. It's just like they're not serving. And so sometimes you're in and the waitress will come and they'll be like, ugh, what do you want? And you're like, can I see the wine list, please? And they're like, ugh. And you're like, oh God, what have I done? I'm so sorry. We're so British. And you're slightly apologetic. Like, I'm so sorry. Could I have a wine?
Could I please spend £100? Yeah. Please, can I?
And they kind of flick their hair at you.
Like, that croissant was amazing. I had to beg for it.
How dare you want a pudding?
Yeah. And then they walk away and they're like, this true Parisian experience. Right here.
They've switched the status, haven't they? They're like super high status, and you're low status. Whereas here, I think we're a bit high status, aren't we? With, it's not just service, is it? It's like, you know, traffic wardens, cleaners, things like that. We can be a bit high. And it's like you were saying, actually, we're all humans, we're all equal, and you shouldn't have that kind of...
And also, like, sort of being aware of when something might be coming from their management and they are literally just doing their job. Like, one of my pet peeves used to be, you know, when you go and pay for something and it'll be like, I don't know, you're in WH Smith and it's like a notepad and a pen and they're like, Haribo's? Like that kind of extra push at the till, and you're like, no thanks, but that's not them doing it to annoy you, they've been told to do that. And so it's just having that self-awareness of like, be nice and don't just be annoyed all the time.
Some of the best exchanges I've had is when I do just like go into what I hope is like the real me of just being like connective and human and nice. So even if you're exhausted or you're really, really pissed off about something, you know, maybe you've actually checked your bank balance and you just think, God, I'm gross, like I've spent too much money. Or, you know, like there's moments where you just want to shut down. But if you do open yourself up to humanity and you have a chat with a cab driver, you say hi to the person in the post office. I mean, this is all simple stuff, but we do need to remind ourselves of it. Are nice to wait and have a chat about the day. Some of the most amazing conversations and amazing exchanges and amazing moments have happened like when I've done that. I've like, as you saw, as you
go back to say, now, we turned up to the interview and Gemma was just like classic Gemma, like taking photos of her Uber driver and like deep in chat and like new best buddies. It was brilliant. We all like met him.
And he was incredible. I was like, he had a jaw that really reminded me of some members of my family, and he's from Ghana, and I know that. I mean, this is deep. So my family is half Jamaican, and he looked so strikingly like some of my family members that I actually had to ask him like where he's from, and he's from Ghana, and a lot of the slaves that ended up in Jamaica came from Ghana, and he has a really similar face to those people in my family. So I'm really glad that I asked him, and I'm really glad that I opened up to him, and I'm really glad that we talked, so I got his surname, and who knows, like, I don't know, it'd be interesting to trace, but just, it's really, I've had some profound and beautiful moments from talking to people that you wouldn't necessarily be expected to talk to that day, so it is worth trying it, even if you're in a rage and life is hurting you.
Yeah, it's like just breaking the norm,
sometimes it can really let the sort of lovely light into both people's day, but I am not perfect in this, because we're like you say, traffic wardens, people on trains that if I lost my ticket, do you remember the time where I started screaming at the man?
paying
you
it 20 quid.
You were getting political. Yeah. That guy.
I was like, this is everything that's wrong with the government.
We were like super right. hungover, like coming back from Birmingham in a rush, and then she's just like, the government! And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I'll get another ticket here. Like,
so, it probably wasn't called for. He was only just following his job. But you know, like, so I'm definitely not perfect
this
in like not
you.
Letting out my rage down the street.
I'm glad I'm not the only
appropriate
one.
Appropriate places.
Yeah. It is true because, about how rare it is, I think, because my friend actually, she was like, it was a really interesting social experiment recently at an airport. The flight got cancelled, and that's like, airports are a raging pit of like, anger. It's like, flights are delayed, everything's going wrong, people are angry. And basically, the flight got delayed, everyone was up in arms, like screaming, kicking off, being really like rude. She basically silently just went to the front and said, it's fine, I don't mind. Like thanks for dealing with this to the guy behind the counter, and he was like, because you've been so nice, like basically I'm going to book you for free on this one that's going in 5 minutes time. And anyway, something happened, and she was just like, God, it was interesting. But just being that one person that isn't kicking off.
Airports are the worst. People show their ugly true selves at an airport.
Airports and road rage.
I've been the road. Really
well, thank you so much, ladies, for getting that off your breasts.
Oh yeah, felt good. I'm sure.
Feel much lighter now. I have something to get off my breasts too, and this is about social media, which we do talk about quite a lot, but it's specifically about narcissism. And there's a really interesting statistic that came out that said that, this is actually for the USA, but it said the diagnosis of narcissistic personality disorder has been rising so sharply in the past 10 years, it's now comparable to the rise in rate of obesity. So it's like an actual serious, like, mental health issue that is on the rise. And at the same time, we see, like, social media, like, going up so much. I think like 1.4 billion people are on Instagram now a day and like using social media. 80 million photographs are uploaded a day to Instagram. So it's like, is it lazy to connect the two? Or is this kind of whole obsession we now have with our image and with social media, is it actually like feeding to the narcissist within us and making people who have like perhaps got a pre-existing like potential to be narcissistic, is it kind of feeding that and exasperating and actually making people sick? Really.
Could you just define quickly like what a narcissistic personality disorder means, like the actual symptoms of it as a serious thing? Because I always use narcissistic as like, I didn't realize it was like an actual personality disorder.
Okay, so this is quite an important distinction, because you can call people narcissists, and I think we're all narcissists a little bit.
If you look in the mirror, you're slightly narcissistic.
I never look in the mirror.
But yeah, like narcissistic personality disorder, so this is how it's defined, a deep need for admiration, an inflated sense of one's own importance, and a lack of empathy for others. And the symptoms of it are dreaming of unlimited success, which I think many of us do, craving attention from other people, tick, tick, and showing few warm feelings in return, and then choosing your friends based on prestige and status rather than personal qualities. But I mean, the thing is, we can throw it open to both. Like, obviously narcissistic personality disorder is quite a serious thing, but there is also just the general feeling of narcissism within us all. Like, do you guys think that social media can be blamed for it, or is that lazy?
I definitely think it is. I'm not an expert because I'm not that good at technology, but it definitely, working with a lot of young people, it definitely, constant selfie taking, it's definitely gonna have an effect. And actually, you do get applauded if you put a really gorgeous picture up of yourself, and it does feel really nice when you put that gorgeous picture up.
Scientifically, it releases dopamine in the brain.
When you get a like.
And I've read studies that compare some of the feeling of high that you get from putting something that you're proud of out online to being as addictive as heroin.
That's really interesting. I feel exactly the same, and I think of course it is feeding into this thing where it's like your ego is being, it's growing and growing and growing from your social media presence. But I think all I would say is I don't think we can blame anyone for joining in this rat race, because like you were saying, Brie, like if you're rewarded for getting attention, getting likes, getting followers, and like you get more money, you get a bigger career, you get all these opportunities, it's like society as a whole is making us act this way. So I think I always say, like, especially to like maybe young women, say, like in schools who ask for advice, I want to say to them, please speak up, please self-promote, please put your work out there because no one else will. So in a way, is that narcissistic because you're like elevating yourself? But I think, what's the other option?
Should we maybe like put health warnings on social media when people join up? Because you know, like with cigarettes now, you get like a danger, you can get lung cancer. Like, should it be like serious, like mental health warnings, or like be aware of, you know, what this could lead to? Because I do think, especially like between the age of 17 and 21, I think it is, you're particularly vulnerable to it, because that, and like everyone, whether you're a narcissist or not, will go through like a narcissistic phase, because that's the age when you basically need to stop being a child and start to find, like, you see your own role in society and start to define who you are. So you're kind of in that phase anyway, and it's like you're really vulnerable, and then suddenly there was so much pressure on you as well to like put the gorgeous photo up, like get the likes, get more friends. And like, can you imagine just having that pressure on you, like, from the age now of, like, what, 5 or 6 that you're being exposed
to? I honestly can't imagine it. I was way ahead of my, like, beyond my years, not ahead of my time. God, I was a little shit. But, like, I really wanted to go to nightclubs from age 13. Like, I had a serious relationship by then. I always obsessed over like how short my miniskirt was because I wanted it to be the shortest, and like used to cross my Wonder Bra at the back so that I had a cleavage, and I cared a lot about my image and being sexy and living life as a grown-up, like. And I think that if I was projected to the culture that is being presented a lot online, and that can kind of mean anything. Like, it depends on like where you go to school, who your friends are, what you're into, really. Like, in some, I know this from visiting schools, in some places it's to be like stick thin and to be able to wear like skinny jeans and have messy hair. For others, it's to have a tiny waist, a massive bum, big boobs, you know. So there's not, I'm not talking about one, it's not one personality, there's not one celebrity, there's not one social media that is to blame. It's very complex, it's a big tangled mess. But I know for a fact, one thing I do know is that if I was my age, if I was 13, like now, I would be susceptible to some quite serious, like, mental health issues, I think. Because I wasn't very happy, kind of, anyway. There was big stuff going down in my life as it was. If I was to add on this pressure, fuck.
Yeah, because you could get away without social media back then. Like, if you wanted to, you could go away and you could totally be disconnected from your friends at school, couldn't you? I remember, like, just wandering around, not having any connection with anyone, and that was time to get my head together.
I found some diaries. This is like the worst thing you can do, is find, like, read your old diaries from your teenage years and be so glad you didn't have social media to blog and things like that then. But I found some diaries. I must have been about 13, 14, and it was kind of the age when you're interested in boys and or girls, but I was interested in boys at that time, and starting to worry about what they think about you. And honestly, like, I was shocked to see, I was obsessed with how I looked. Like, I had this image of myself as really overweight, and I was like drawing pictures of myself and like imagining all these scenarios and like really like beating myself up. And so that's me like with a piece of paper in isolation doing that. Now imagine like putting those photos up and having like the comments and all, not getting the likes. And that just, I just look at how fragile I clearly was at that point, and when I was like basically like self-flagellating and drawing like hideous pictures of myself and stuff, like, and it's just, you just imagine that magnifying glass that you add onto that.
Sorry to keep banging on, but just because I have spoken to a lot of people about this, and I wrote about it in the book, and I really like went in on myself and thought about it, and thought about how to articulate my feelings about this without crying or screaming. But, you know, direct from the mouths of young people today, I went into one school which kind of looked like Hogwarts, and it was a girls' school, and they were awesome, and I thought, God, these guys are having a lovely time in terms of education. We were in the library, their teachers were quite progressive, and they just opened up to me a subject matter which hadn't been discussed amongst their classes because it wasn't necessarily relevant, but there was a huge self-harm issue within their school amongst their year 9 group, and they were really worried about it because it was becoming a bit of a trend. The teachers didn't know this was going on. When I left, they were like, right, we can focus on this, there's a problem now. But the way they spoke about it was just really interesting, and we were talking a lot about like the romanticization of self-harm online. And, you know, unpicking it from a bigger perspective, there was lots of different threads that were part of this problem. Again, I am no expert. I never pretend to be. Mm. I'm not a psychologist. I am not trained. I'm just an open-minded person who's dealt with shit, some shit in my life, or know people that have dealt with other shit. And choose to talk about that. And, you know, we were talking about just different things as to how we view ourselves, what we want from our lives, how people are interacting with social media. One girl said that she could sit in a 3-hour stretch and take up to 60 selfies in isolation. She was sweet, gregarious, cool, funny, articulate, and that's what, how she was choosing to spend her spare time, and everybody just thought it was funny and normal. I then opened it up to the kind of the crew, the girls, and I said, have you ever seen a picture of your parents your age, one of your parents, or someone that you like, that you love, that you know, your age, an old school photograph? And they were like, yeah. I said, okay, are they smiling in that? Do they look happy in that picture that you're imagining? And they were like, yeah. I was like, that's because they didn't know what the picture was going to look like for at least 2 weeks. And they were like, whoa! I was like, imagine if you only saw your own face in the morning when you brushed your teeth, when you went to the toilet in the day and you washed your hands, and then you saw your own face at the end of the day when you brush your teeth again.
Also, those pictures of family members are like, they're, it's because they're in a nice setting, or they're on holiday, or they're in a location. Why would we want a big face and then the sunset? Like, don't obscure the beauty of the surroundings.
Do you know? So with this whole selfie thing though, right, so this is going to sound probably, and it probably is quite like, it was probably quite bad, like how flippant it was, but my friend and I, when we first got on Instagram, used to do a thing and we'd call it like the selfie game, and we'd look at our friends and we'd count the last 15 photos, and like the more selfies they had, the more we'd be like, well, they're an narcissist. And I know that's quite bad, but in all honesty, now when I look down at, like, if I know people who are like really taking like very posed, made up, like gorgeous but very selfies, I do think like, are you okay? Like, a little just like it's something going on in your life that you're feeling a bit shit about yourself. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So I think it can be.
That is so interesting, because it's so true, isn't it?
Like it's like when
it's so true.
It's like when if someone in a, like, is writing like, I'm so in love, we're so happy, we're, oh my God, me and my husband, like, you're going, are you guys all right? Are you about to get divorced? Because you need to talk
about
it.
That's been
scientifically
proven.
Oh, really?
That the more lovey-dovey, the more selfies, the more I'm in love, I love my boyfriend, the more they're on the brink of breakup. But I thought, what was really interesting about what you just said, though, is that I thought the empathy part was really, really important, because if you're starting to lose empathy for other people in the world, that, I, to me, that's like red flag, like you've got a problem. And in that study that I was reading, it says that Donald Trump, it has got a narcissistic personality disorder. I don't know who has diagnosed him, but in this study it said that he had it. And, you know, from his tweets when he's saying big crowd and, you know, he really wants to be liked and he has no empathy for others, like, that is someone I do not want to be like. Do you think there's any, like, warnings, maybe? I mean, we've just spent 40 minutes talking about how we care about the service industry. I don't think we are lacking empathy, but we're obviously narcissistic as well.
Yeah. Well, I think we all have a little bit inside us, and if it's fed, it's fed. But can I just say on the other side as well, because we're being, like, not down, but we're like highlighting some of the negative sides of social media. Like, there is something, if you are a young person, and again, like what you said, Gemma, there, I think we all echo, like, not experts in this at all, just people who've experienced stuff, spoken to people and chatting about what we think about it. But I think, like, there is something, if you are a young person and you're suffering, whether it's with something actually diagnosable or whether it's just that you're feeling shit about yourself, whatever, having the opportunity to connect with people in a way that, if you're, especially if you're quite shy, you might not be able to in real life, can also help people in a positive way. So it kind of goes both ways. So I don't want to just be like down on it. And say,
no,
like,
yeah, absolutely. No, and that's why I wanted to hear how people express it, because I often find myself feeling so impassioned by certain things that I wonder whether I'm on the edge of rant, and I don't want to be ranty. Like, I want nuance, I want discussion, and I want to be challenged, and I don't want to be like too upset or like, you know, there is not wrong or right. And I feel like, again, social media exacerbates this kind of black and white print of this is exactly how I feel about something. Mm. And like, social media can't be blamed for narcissistic personality disorder, but as to whether it's a part of like the big tapestry, it's glaring me so.
Because we should talk about your show a bit just quickly, because that's an example of you're putting on a show and a performance that is all about empathy, isn't it? It's all about putting across something that you want an audience of people to feel something. And obviously that social media can't tell stories in a way that other things like performance can.
Yeah, in that way. So I suppose that show was particularly, it's called My Beautiful Black Dog, and it was made 3 years ago, and we're just about to end tour with the tour in October, end touring it. It was made from an instinct of actually coming of age, like in my mid-20s, and feeling very alone because I didn't know how to reach out or communicate with friends about feeling very alone and actually feeling very anxious and depressed. So I needed to find a language for that. So I put it, because I've always written poems and songs, I put it into a show. And then when it was put, you know, on in a theatre space or a gig venue, it would be a catalyst for other people to open up in the pub or in the bar afterwards. So it's that very, that amazing thing about that live thing is very immediate, and I think gigs make you feel like that, and you know, even cinema and loads of things. But going back to what you were saying earlier about there is something wonderful about that social media thing as well, because it links people, especially for women and young women, you know, on Twitter and on Instagram. There's this group of young ladies that come to gigs, some of the gigs that I do, and they call themselves Girl Gang. And I think they started from a movement that Kate Nash, the musician, did a few years ago, where she sort of called all her people that came to her gigs a girl gang, and then there was a massive hashtag. And then they were very young when it started, and there was these young women from everywhere that just loved going to see live music, connecting on the internet, yeah, taking some selfies or group pictures covered in glitter or whatever they wanted to be covered in, a lot of them from different parts of the country that hadn't met, and then meeting at gigs. And as that carried on, and as I started to meet them, I saw more different ones coming from Hastings, from Bromley, from here, all meeting up, and now they're this big network that have got each other's backs forever. And yes, they are very active on social media, but they also go and do that live experience, that live togetherness thing together as well, which I think is all about balance.
Keep
ourselves, and those like kind of modern age Matildas that are, you know, are in their room, you know, finding these little pockets of things that are going on around the world through the internet and through Instagram and hashtags. That's so the biggest positive thing. And then maybe in a few years' time, when they're allowed to go out on their own, acting upon those incredible things that they found out through Instagram.
The way you've just said it makes it so clear that actually it is an addiction then. Because like you just said, if you're taking a few selfies, going out, having fun, managing it well, great. Mm. If you're alone in your room, taking 60 selfies in a room on your own, that's the same as smoking 20 fags out of a window on your own, isn't it? Like, that balance.
I think there we are. We can really identify addiction, can't we, in terms of like the classic addictions, such as smoking, a huge phenomenon that was totally normal and like normalised in our society, and the backlash against that has been so huge. No one can even imagine the fact that you'd be able to smoke on a plane, like not that long ago, like in our parents' lifetime. But we've identified those addictions, and alcohol as well, and drugs, obviously. But we absolutely have to talk about the latest thing, and that is our addiction to our devices, to social media, and ourselves. Yeah.
But maybe that's the key. It's like, you're not saying there's anything wrong with taking a selfie or being on social media, but it's about talking about it, opening the conversation like we're doing now, and hopefully like people will continue to do, and some education, and especially for young people who are coming to a point where they're going to become exposed and be allowed to join up and stuff like that, just to make them really aware of the benefits, but also
and the good stuff that's out there. Yeah. Like, you know, you're talking about Girl Gang. We're talking about your show, My Beautiful Black Dog. Like, I scream about it for people to come and see that for reasons that it does open up a dialogue and it does make you feel more connected. And that's why I love working in a live sphere as well as all sorts of spheres. It's really important. And I just, you know, what we were saying yesterday, we had a meeting yesterday about theatre and the importance of it and the connectivity of a live experience and how genreless that is these days. And the guy Rob that we were meeting, who works for an amazing production company called Boundless, he was saying about how young people are kind of like rejigging education in terms of how they're educating themselves via the internet in a really exciting way. Like, he was talking about like a movement towards philosophy, so philosophizing on Tumblr, like, and spreading like some deep ass shit like via Tumblr, and I was like, yes,
move over Socrates. Like, Tumblr is
maybe I shouldn't have necessarily been following Kim Kardashian, me age 13. When I think about that, that scares me. But maybe if I could like learn about philosophy on Tumblr, that could have been cool.
Yeah. And also not demanding too much of each other, because the reason we're anxious that we've got 20 emails in 5 minutes and we haven't checked them is because people expect you to reply straight away. WhatsApp, email. It's like sometimes it's just like, I want to just disappear for 2 days in a cave.
I fantasize about it all the time.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I fantasize about just, I'm definitely going to try some sort of detox at some point when I'm less busy, which is never. I'm throwing it away for a bit. At some point, I'm throwing it all away.
Do you know that every generation, like every time there's like something new, like the new big thing, like obviously now social media is quite young, it's quite new, so we're still learning a lot about it and about ourselves as well. But like, I was reading a really interesting article and they were saying like there's always been something that people freak out about, like whether it's television or cars. And they said even back, like Socrates wrote about writing as how it was like the death of thought, because people now could write things down and how it would like ruin our brains. So like it's interesting to go like, you know, there are issues and we need to educate and talk about it all, but this will one day be seen as probably as normal as something like writing.
Absolutely,
So my topic that I wanted to get off my breast is basically I did a TV advert earlier this year and I guess I was exposed to more people, and I got a lot of comments that were calling me a hipster, and it was like in a derogatory sense. They'd be like smug hipster, hipster nonsense, you know, just like just stop. They called me that, and I just thought I don't have any association with that word really. I hear it a bit and I know that it means like someone with a beard and someone with a beanie hat, someone that lives in like a gentrified area of London, which, sorry, I do. But also,
have you got a beard? I haven't seen
that. Got a beard. Oh God, I am the stereotype. But what I don't like is being labelled in that way, because I don't label other people, and it's just like, well, why would you just diminish me to this thing? But also, do you remember when the cereal cafe in East London got like attacked, and it was like all of this news of it, like people hated them because they came to the neighbourhood? And I was torn by that because I did understand people's reactions, but I also thought that's a local business and they're two people. Mm. So I just thought,
that was
what
the
do
cafe
you think?
They just sold like cereal,
and everyone
like £5 a bowl or something like that.
Yeah,
so everyone was kind of like furious.
It was like a hipster backlash. Yeah, but I just wondered like what you guys thought, because I guess the word has history. It actually used to be a positive word.
Yeah, it used to be cool.
It used to be cool.
Hip, isn't it?
Do you ever get called it? Is Margate hipster now? Or?
Definitely, Margate is called hipster.
Yeah.
They call Margate hipster a lot.
Hackney on scene.
But I just ignore it, because it's like, there's so many different types of people that live in Thanet. It's like, it's really funny, like, that's a label.
Because it's like the rise of vaping and the rise of, like, avocado and blah blah blah. Like, would you ever use that word? Because I just feel like
it's just so funny. I don't know why. Like, all of this discussion, when which happens a lot. I feel like people talk about hipsterism a lot, particularly when you're talking about it from a marketing and commodity perspective. It's actually
because
hilarious.
Also, you know, blue bottle coffee
that
is like sold in LA, and you do feel like a hipster in there. Nestle have just bought it.
Wow.
And like, so Nestle, who I mean, they have a history that I'm not comfortable with. Like, I won't be buying that product anymore. Mm. It was like, big coffee chain buys hipster business. And I'm like, oh, yeah. It's all just got really grim.
Do you want to know where it came from originally?
Yeah,
I've had to Google, our old friend Google.
Yeah.
It was actually from the 1940s in like the jazz scene. And it was people who used to like use their hips to dance to jazz. Oh. And then they were seen as like the hip people, like the cool people.
Yeah.
So they were...
It's reclaiming it.
The first hipster. There we go.
I might get hipster tattoos on my hips.
Sorry, it was officially first called as characters who like hot jazz.
Yeah.
So Emma, take it as a compliment. You just like hot jazz.
I'm gonna reclaim it.
Yeah. I think bullying in any forum and labelling in any play in that has no place. Actually, and it exists, but I think it's disgusting and it's horrible that you had to go through it. Mm. And I won't use that word. I won't use anything that generalises a whole bunch of people ever. Mm. You know.
Like, have you seen? It only went up yesterday, I think. So depends on when you're listening to this. It was a while ago, because everything moves so quickly. Sophie Hagen, who's an awesome comedian and writer, and she's got brilliant podcasts as well. She wrote a piece on The Independent, or in The Independent, depending on how you view the world, about which is a kind of like a sort of statement on a lot of trolling she got for a picture that she posted of herself in a swimsuit. And Sophie is a big girl and she's beautiful, mm-hmm. but because of her size and her being on the internet in that context, it somehow facilitated the floodgates to be opened for her to be trolled and attacked and told to go and die. And she just wrote a really, 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 really funny, really sweary, which is kind of liberating, piece in The Independent about just like, I'm really busy, like, fuck off. And I look fit in that picture, and she does.
Yeah, good for her.
And it's just funny and good, and I think it's kind of all right to just stick your finger up, because everyone says ignore the trolls.
Yeah.
But I actually think it's fine to just go, do you know, if someone came up to me in the street and was derogative, like,
I just, that's it. And also, like, just put my hands up, like, I don't think, I think I could be called worse things, and I actually, like, I can brush that off very, very easily. I actually find it quite funny.
Yeah.
But I think when trolling gets really nasty like that, like, I was actually with the girls who write for the Metro yesterday, and they, because the Metro is obviously the biggest, one of the biggest circulation newspapers in London, the, you know, they get death threats off the back of a piece about how, like, what was one of the examples? Like, how one of them doesn't like roast dinners or something. It was, like, a really sort of, like, you know those things where you write something that you... to stir up the pot a bit? And they were like, yeah, we get, like, all sorts of threats, and it was really, really sad. But I just thought, why stick people in a box, like, immediately? That's what I don't
But I think we have a tendency now, and I think it's partly, like, this whole thing of Twitter as well, that you have 140 characters to make your point.
Yeah.
It's 280 now.
280? Yeah. Okay. I think how things change. Well, interesting to see if that actually changes the way people insult people online.
Yeah.
But I think you have to be, like,
so more threats.
Yeah. Your language. But what I find about what you were just saying there about hipster, and I know we've talked in another episode about the word snowflake as well, when people use those kinds of labels, I feel like they're just trying to reduce what you're saying and your opinion on it, and by saying you can be dismissed as this. And, you know, I think it's like the worst form of argument, because it's like, it's basically, it's no point at all, and it's just trying to fling an insult at you, call you a name, and not actually in any way, like, if for example, with that ad, they'd wanted to open up a conversation about what they found objectionable, okay, fine, you would have had a great conversation with them, probably.
Yeah.
Could have even been interesting. But to just call you a hipster, like, it's just so pointless. What does it even mean? And
yeah.
It's reducing everything about you as a woman and as a person into a nonsense label.
Yeah. And it's just because we want to box things, don't we? And we are in such a time of, like, of trying to define, like, a really noisy world.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to wrap things up in our language and our communication, like, as quickly as possible to move on to the next thing, because we're moving so quickly. So just to be able to clump hipster on something it's kind of easy, you know? And like, and I agree in terms of as a sentence, or not even a sentence, as a word. I used to, like, years ago when I was like living in East London, when I found it like a hotbed of excitement and creativity and had like the best nights out ever, and I could wear my pajamas all day long and like, and just had so much fun. And I could just be like, and then when the hipster word started getting used in that context, I was like, I would have a business meeting with someone, not a business meeting, I was definitely not having them, but like a meeting, an opportunistic meeting with someone, and be like, yeah, you know me, just like I'm just a hipster. And it was kind of way more funny, like fun, and like represented like potentially, and everyone uses creative now, but like it represented something that I could identify with, and was a sort of lighthearted way of saying like, I enjoy my life.
So, can it be useful then, actually? Can it just be like a shortcut sometimes? So like, if I'm having a conversation with you guys and I'm describing someone, I go, you know, he's a bit of a hipster, like we automatically will know what I mean. Yeah. So is it like just a useful shortcut in a way?
But in a way, not now, because I would hate to be described as that now. Yeah. And I would never go to a meeting and be like, I'm just a bit of it. Like, I'm like, I'm a businesswoman and I'm an author. You know, I wouldn't be like a hipster author. Like what's that about? And I do something, you know, even like stuff like, I'm crazy. I wear like crazy clothes. Like, I would, like, it's bullshit. Yeah. Like, basically, it's contextualizing and defining something that's not even real.
Complex people with different layers and different sides. Like, that's my whole thing at the moment with, no, I can't define my career very easily.
Yeah.
Like, when people say, what do you do? I'm like, God knows how to explain it. Because, and people are like, oh, give me something so I can box you in quickly. But don't let them.
Yeah, I'm not into the word. And actually, like, it's a really interesting point to think about in terms of like, how we are using language and how language is getting claimed a lot to help sell things, and how we should be not feeling guilty to represent ourselves in different ways all of the time, and for that to evolve continuously.
Because I was going to say, it's a marketing thing as well, isn't it? It's whether it's in what you were talking about, you know, when you were younger and you were trying to maybe explain to someone what you bring to the table in a way you wouldn't now, like you were marketing yourself maybe a bit.
Yeah.
And now someone who's trying to sell a book, for example, or a performance might try and think of like those kind of buzzy marketing words just to shortcut it and try to hide it.
We haven't been overused yet and like, it's like playing to something negative.
Yeah. It's hard all the time, isn't it? Like when we're, because I work on Bree's show, like I exec produce My Beautiful Black Dog, and it's been such an interesting journey because in so many ways it is so much about a feeling and an experience, and it's, you know, we summarise it as part gig, part theatre, and it's a punk musical about depression. And I've seen the word depression become commodified since we started the journey 3 years ago. So when I was really deeply thinking about rewriting the press release, I started to say it was a love story because it's an ode to life. It's about love and it's about feelings, rather than thinking about how selling it on this, what's become a strange buzzword called depression. Like, what the fuck is that about?
It's a very real thing that people, kills people every day.
It's really important that that isn't like just something that's just going to sell a new guru's book in some ways. Yeah. You know, so being able to wrap things up and like use language and conversation in the same way that podcast does, same way that live theatre might take you on a journey, and appreciating like the arts and individuality and being kinder to each other is a really important place to come to and to keep experimenting with.
Yeah, and I want to tell you that hipster's got the word hip in it. You're definitely hip and you're deep and thoughtful. So fuck them.
and you got grey hips.
Yeah. Right, we've all got to go out like dancing to some jazz, some hot jazz.
Yeah, let's go dance to our jazz tonight, ladies.
I'm well up for that.
Thank you so much. That was amazing.
Thank you.
It's been such a pleasure. Bree, can I just ask, and Bree and Gemma, how do people go and see your show if they want to go? We've talked a bit about it, so we should probably say like where and what they
where
can find
and
out
when.
More.
Yeah.
Right, it's going on tour. It's beginning in Oxford on the 9th at the North Wall.
On the 9th of
October, sorry. October, then it's heading to Sheffield. Liverpool for two nights at the Unity Theatre, Sheffield, Picture House Social, Birmingham Rep, and it ends at the Roundhouse on the 27th and 28th of October, and it's the last hurrah of it. And then the month after, the live music will be released online and be able to be bought and stuff.
Is there a website? we can check
there
out.
There is, it's brigitteaphrodite.co.uk.
Brilliant.
And I saw the show 2 years ago and it was the best thing ever. Oh, and literally, nice. Like, I can't stop thinking about it even
bring
now.
People.
So, go see it.
If you're listening, bring anybody that you know or, oh, you're just yourself that is interested in any of the things that we've said, especially if you love life and maybe if you know somebody that's struggling in any way, whether you're suspicious that they may be struggling or they've been open about that, because there's many different degrees on the spectrum of our sort of labyrinth of mental health. And if you are particularly worried about someone or maybe yourself, then I urge you to take them to this beautiful piece of work because it's very special and you'll never forget it.
Thank you so much once again, ladies. It's been a pleasure. Now let's go out and enjoy some hot jazz.
Hope you enjoyed that episode of Get It Off Your Breast with Gemma Kearney and Brigitte Aphrodite. That was quite the episode, lots of opinions shared. So please tune in next week for another episode of Get It Off Your Breast with another amazing guest. We have the legendary Connie Huck with us, and tune in then.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.